Hello and welcome to Holden. Today is June the 24th, 1999, and in Creekside this morning we will hear a session by Edna Hansen, Brain and Vision, number 99-9. Let's listen in.
Do the final class on the internal the Tree of Life, and I'm very grateful to have had the privilege to be with all of you. And I like to say, every time I come, I know, but I'm going to say it again, this is my favorite class because it's about our creativity and art. And first of all, I drew a tree because if we can appreciate all of our wonderful gifts of the brain, then we can see that it is truly our internal tree of life. And the more we are aware of all of the gifts that God gave us, as I told the children this morning at Narnia, I showed them a little piece of greenery that I picked up and asked them what they thought it was. I had a piece of, I think I left it there, a little bough from a tree that happened to have two little shoots out here and two here and a little tiny part. And right away they said, oh, they said it's a star, it's a snowflake, it's a person, it's a dancer, you know, they just flowed with kinds of responses to seeing this image, I mean this thing I held in my hand, and I said, do you know where that comes from? And they didn't. So then we started into the brain and the fact that we, above all humankind that God created, have this marvelous brain that we're not even aware yet of all its wonderful doings, but we keep looking for them now that we have PET scan, CAT scan, and everything else, we can look right through it. But I don't think that's going to really give us the essence of what God gave us here. We have an imagination, and we have an imagination that no other living form of life has. And that in itself, I think, God gave us this wonderful piece of the part that we have, which is called imagination. We don't know where it is. It's part of our, I think, our spirit, that through that we can keep on designing and doing wonderful things, and hopefully we'll find solutions to everything. First we have to think it and sometimes visualize it even, and then anything that you put into word, it has energy and will become if you work on it long enough. That's what the gentleman that invented the Polaroid camera said, that first he thought it and then he knew that he could do it, and all of the other kinds of things that we have. To begin with art, which is really special for me because I was fortunate to meet a woman. I flew up to San Francisco from Los Angeles because in Los Angeles I read in the paper that Rhoda Kellogg had written a book called The Psychology of Children's Art. Has anyone ever seen it? Well, this was quite a few years ago, and I think you can still get that book through the library. And I was so impressed with what I read, because at the time I was working with children and basically functioning through art workshops with them to find their creativity. And the things she said were just astounding. So I flew up there. It was during my master's, the years I was spending doing my master's. And when I met Rhoda, she was very kind. She was, at that time, the director of the Phoebe Hearst Preschool Learning Center in San Francisco. And that was founded after the great earthquake by the wife of Randolph Hearst. And the Phoebe Hearst Preschool Learning Center is there on Gary and Laguna Streets, which is two blocks from the Japanese Cultural Center, which takes three blocks. Has anyone ever been to San Francisco? Do you know Gary Street? You know the Japanese Cultural Center? But two blocks from there is this center, which has the largest collection of children's art in the world. And the laboratory on the first floor contains documents of work that Rhoda collected from all over the world on a tour she went with her husband, who's a journalist. and they spent almost 5 years going around to every country that they could reach, and they found out when the child begins to scribble, the first markings that children make, and this, and all through the pictorial stages. So this was her research, but she came back and wrote The Psychology of Children's Art. Following that book, she wrote the Analyzing Children's Art, which was used as a text in colleges. The fascinating thing is, the reason that I was interested, because I was already trying to get into brain research, she said that the scribbles that children make when they're very, very young, the first scribbles are actually brain tracings. And although this didn't come across too well in the colleges, the Caltech Institute of Technology in Pasadena invited her to put up an exhibit of the work she brought back from her tour around the world, because they could see the relationship of what she was talking about. Because we lived in Pasadena, there's a great number of researchers there doing brain research, so they immediately looked at that and thought, this is really something. At her home, where I went several times, flew up there, because she became an advisor for my master's, she has a mandala, a piece of stitchery that is 6 feet in diameter, and it is so beautiful that she made this because when she was, she went around the world and found the beautiful, there it is. This was a 6 foot mandala that she made in stitchery, because you can imagine how beautiful it is. Center and the radiating lines around this core of the drawing is actually, each one goes out to a different country of the world. And this is how she found out that all children, little ones, tiny ones, given the first implement to make marks, will do 20 basic scribbles all over the world. And she collected this and did her research and found out that this is true. Now, there's something else when you study art as psychology. Anything the child draws on like this is called the Gestalt field. And she found out that there are 17 placement patterns that the child will put these scribbles on the paper. And this, because I was already into vision therapy, is that children, when their vision is developing, do not see the whole gestalt. And so they will draw there where they see the paper, where they see their imagery on the paper. Their drawing is part of their way to visualize this whole thing here. By 5 or 6 years old, you see that they begin to balance their drawings. It's as though they put a line down here on the kind of scale where you put one something on one little plate and something on the other to keep it balanced. And that's the way the child who has come into full fruition through vision does with their art. And they'll put a house over here, then they'll put a tree over here. A lot of times they put a line up here for the sky. And I've talked to many children, and I've had more than one tell me that that's so the sky won't fall down. They don't put them all over the paper, which we think they should. That's all right. The same way when you see them at that age, 3, 4, 5, starting to do their seascapes, and they have a boat on the water, you won't see the boat in the water. You'll see the boat on the water, because they don't want it to sink. They have all these rational things to tell you about their drawings. We like to have them be, putting it together the way it's supposed to be, but children have a better sense when they're drawing imagery of figures very young. And Rhoda has a collection in a book that's just about the multitude of figures she's gathered from children drawing all over the world. And a lot of them will have many more appendages than we have and will look a little bit different. But Picasso said if you want to really learn to draw, you should watch a child, because they're always looking for a sense of balance. And we're not very balanced, when they think in terms of not only the head, but the amount of intelligence that adults are supposed to possess. So they make the head larger, and so it doesn't balance out, so they'll add what's necessary. And child art is fantastic. Anyway, I have some of these pictorial things that I can let you have. The way the research was done also was to make the first scribbles, which went into cross mandalas. And in Switzerland, a doctor there for years has used that as an indication as to whether the child was developing normally through the brain, or if they did not make the cross mandala by 3 years old, they did have brain damage. And this has been used by all psychologists working with children that use art as an indicator. And you will see when children travel, they will do this, and that will be because something in them, as Rhoda said, is using the archetypes from many, many, many centuries, comes out through the brain work. The eye is an extension of the brain, and that's why she said that this tactile thing that they begin, which is very, they love it. They love to draw, they love to scribble. We should allow them to scribble as long as they can, because it is an eye enforcer. And when you make them do a special kind of picture, you know, this is the way it should be, you're interfering with the brain process that normally should be allowed to develop. In the center in San Francisco, which you can still visit, it has gone on with the research. Teachers from all over the country come to there to do their research, and you have to pay. It used to be $25 when I went there, but now I'm sure that it's more to spend a couple of days in research for your whatever you're doing in your work. But it was in the section, and if you've been to San Francisco, you know that that area has a multicultural environment there, and some of it is are low class, you know, housing. These children were allowed to come into the center every day and draw as much as they wanted. And I spent a summer there just emptying paint cans, because that's what volunteers do there to study what the child is doing. You just are the one that takes care of having clean water on the table. Or they can use the felt pens or pencils. And all they're required to do is they can take as many as they want, but there's a basket, and they should be allowed to put one for her to keep during the day. And out of that has come a multitude of drawings that are kept in the research files, as well as her trip around the world. But the thing that she discovered also with having this program was that the children that scribbled, then she followed them into school, and 300 children, none of them were poor readers. They had all achieved, if not above average, they were at least good readers. And so that was something that she tried to go forth with too. She taught at UCLA for 1 year, but she said they really weren't interested in research. So, and I think it was the year after that I went to see her, and I was fortunate that, I guess I was humble enough to say, gee, I've been waiting for somebody like you to all these years to connect, you know, drawing with the brain. So she and I became very good friends. But looking at a child's art is phenomenal. This little girl is almost 5 years old, and she did this for me at Narnia, and her name is on it, and it's Maggie. See, she's seen the whole gestalt. Is that your daughter?
Yes.
It's beautiful. How old is she?
She's four.
She's four.
She's four in March.
Four in March? Well, she's done very well, because she sees the whole gestalt, and her eyes are doing good. And that's one way that parents can tell if the normal, you know, visual maturation is going on, because they won't leave any part of the paper undone. It's beautiful. Well, you can have it, Mother. She gave it to me, but you can have it. That exciting part of art is not only because they've researched the finite parts of it, along with doing the cross mandalas. By the time the child reaches four and a half, 5 years old is on the outer rim. You can count, you know, from beginning and all the way. Then they take on the enculturation of their country. And the ones in the Far East might draw houses that are on stilts that are, you know, like in Thailand and some of the other places. And the other houses will start to look like ours. Their people will still try to find balance in their forms. It won't be like we think they should look. But anyway, this is a fabulous way to understand that all children are about the process of something that God put us into us, and that is our creativity. And they should never stop. I go to different schools and I talk about art and children and in reference to the brain, and hopefully that each child will be allowed to do her own expression or his own expression without having patterns, because patterns, what I tell the teachers, because a lot of them are supposed to do the pumpkins, you know, all the pumpkins come out alike or this or that, explain to the child that that's not art, that's craft, and that's okay. You're doing craft work. Art is so special and finite that we have a way that we can help children understand fine art and the difference between the patterning and what they create. And when I'm with the group, I'll say, if it looks like somebody else's, it's not from really from you. You know, yours has to be so unique and different that it's like no one else's. And they don't think about that right away, because they've been, you know, wanting to draw the best one in the room, and that somebody will copy that child's way of rendering something. But actually, you can get through that. You know, there's no artist like you anywhere in the world. It's just like you have a fingerprint that's like nobody else's. You have an art sense inside of you that God gave you, and it's like it's your own. So that's very important to me, that we have a recollection to be able to see in children the beginning of an art sense that's very beautiful. And looking at their pictures, you can see that they're about something besides just scribbling. They're developing eyes, and they're using some way that we have kind of lost our way of doing. How many people here do draw and paint and have that great as a profession or your hobby?
You have
and produce paintings, then you can feel how important that is to you. And each one of us is an artist. And the one that said that is Leonardo da Vinci. Actually, there's a new book out that I think is unbelievable, because you'll all start painting again, or drawing or sketching, if you read this book. And I'm so proud of him. A fellow that wrote it, he's gone farther on than I have with his degrees, but he did get his master's at Goddard, where I went, because it is a kind of a Goddard is a college that allows you to do experimental work and allows you to come up with your own philosophy. The significance of child art, I have quite a few of these that you can have. Then she wrote some papers about the origins of graphic art, and this is really interesting, because she tried so hard to show people the essence of child work, that she would give lectures to teachers, and she would ask them, when she showed them four renderings, she would show them this one. I guess they're not too easily seen, but you can come up later and see them. And then she would show them, this is terribly, terribly faint, I probably haven't even, anyway, she had four renderings here. None of them come out very good, but only one of them is child art. And all of them look very familiar. But one of them's from Mayan temple rubbings that she gathered on her trip. One are Aborigine scratching. One are Chinese symbols, and one is the child's pictorials. And she asked teachers which one they thought were the child's. And it was very, very difficult to decipher which was which. In fact, she said many didn't do it. But she said that the archetypes in the brain come from the source that children have when they're doing their renderings that we have lost. We all have these from our genes from way, 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 way back. And it's a fascinating idea to look at art in that respect, that they're bringing their drawings from here. Later on, after that the part there that I said was enculturated, then they start to draw like things that they are actually visibly seeing. But this is an extremely important study for teachers to have, just so they won't make every child do the same thing. But art is something, and it's empowered not in just pictures. I mean, everybody can write a poem. Everybody can paint a picture. It's just that we don't take up the tools and go about doing it because we're so involved in the rest of our life. But it has something to do with our emotions, in that art is a... I bet you could talk on this even more so because you've been active with people. I've had art workshops for mentally retarded young adults, and they'll come in and their faces are not too expressive, and after a couple of classes they are responsive, they show emotions of, you know, happiness, and really try to understand, because it's a community of, you know, I have like 12 of them, and they would share with each other, and it was just because something out of them came about through their art process. None of them were artists, but they didn't indicate that they couldn't draw. They went about doing this. A very interesting thing happened for me. I worked with children that were educably mentally retarded in art in California, and a friend of mine, I only had one class. I had more classes at LA City College on Saturday mornings with the gifted Pasadena Association for Gifted Children. And these children were like 9, 10, 11 years old. And we used to have 6-week sessions with a class for 2 hours every Saturday. A friend had heard about my class, and a friend of mine said that this woman wanted me to come up to Santa Barbara and look at an exhibit that she was setting up. And when I got up there, this exhibit was of children that were mentally retarded. And I couldn't believe the similarity between the gifted pictures and those who were, some of them were not educably mentally retarded. They were even on a lower scale, under 50 IQ. There was a passion there on both ends of the median there, of the gifted who had expression and the others who had a release for their own emotions. And so this was fantastic. And that's something that we can recognize then in art, that all of us could benefit from drawing. I love to scribble. Yes, please. Did you ask? Did you
want to... No, I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Anyway, I want to ask one. You
yes,
said
please.
First scribblings that children make are brain what?
Tracings.
Tracings,
mm-hmm.
Thank you.
It's in the paper here if you'd like, like to have one.
Okay.
The effect on the emotions has been very well recorded in this book. That is something I have to keep reading and reading because it is pretty biochemical, and the woman, Candace Pert, who wrote Molecules of Emotion, which has really actually scientifically proven that our emotions will control our body works and will keep us healthy, or if we are negative, we will have some other problems. And that's not to say that misfortune doesn't, you know, happen, but we do have a great sense of control if we can learn that our little molecules are hooking up with ligands and peptides and things and doing things we we don't want them to do if we're depressed. And depression is a state that seems to be coming more and more so in our country, and it results in more and more illnesses and more drugs to combat that. And it all goes back to, let's look at Holden and let's be whole. I just, without the stress of cars and television and radios, and you don't even have to go read the newspapers if you don't want to, and they're not too current, so it's... Just think of the amount of stuff that's off of you in an environment like this, than if you where you have your habitat and have to do your daily life. But if you're emotionally capable of feeling that God is in your being, then you do have kind of a protection around you that not everybody walks around with, and that's very something to be grateful for.
Who is the author of that book?
Molecules? Oh, Candace Pert, my favorite researcher.
Candace?
Pert, P-E-R-T. In fact, my friend that wrote How to Think Like Leonardo da Vinci quoted Candace Pert in here about her understanding of the emotional state in regards to our art sense. And that author is Michael Glieb, G-E-L-B. And did anybody ever see a book that was Tony Buzan, B-U-Z-A-N, and he was a very creative innovator a couple of years ago, and his books are still very popular. But he was even the one that talked about vertical and horizontal thinking, that one is definitely left-brained and the other is right-brained, so that people shouldn't be expected to take notes like you were taught in school, very orderly, that sometimes the main topic should be in the middle and then shoot out with one idea here. You've probably seen that. It's very, very adaptable for some people to be note takers in that way, where they can't do it that way. I can't do it that way. But those are things that come from our creativity. Mm-hmm. And he was a great fellow that he could do that.
So anyway, I'm going to watch this very carefully, because there's so many things I want to tell you.
If children express themselves, which is something else, getting words out randomly, not trying to make sentences, but just letting our emotions drive our thoughts, we can find it. We're very poetic, or whether you want to call it poetry or not. Expression is something that we as humans with our wonderful imagination have a wonderful way to develop ourselves, and it's very calming, and it's a good thing. Journal writing is another thing that we do in art, but sometimes that's even harder than just expressing yourself in a poem, and it doesn't have to rhyme. When we were in school, maybe we just learned that we gotta rhyme. Most of our poetry today does not rhyme. I would like to read you something that one of my little people wrote. If my mommy had 100 hands, she would drive a car and plant flowers. She could hang 100 pictures at the same time. She could turn on the radio and swing. If she were a bird, she would have 100 wings and do tricks in the air. If she had 100 heads, she could look and listen to everything. If she had 100 hands, she could hold 100 baby kittens. If she had 100 hands, she would need 1,100 more. That was 5-year-old, and I wrote it down for her, and that was her thoughts. That's children, they don't let a specific kind of diction or dialogue hold them back. They just express, and that's the way we can do it. And something else that's really, if this were, now that I know how it works up at Holden, next time I come, I will do a workshop that's more hands-on, and I'm sorry that I couldn't find 35 paint pots that had red, blue, yellow, black, and white, which is, if I'm going to do that kind, I would take that many, but then you would all have to not face each other, because you shouldn't look at each other at all, because that would not work with this. And then I will ask everybody to be sure that they're not able to see what their neighbor's doing. And then I have to ask another special question, which I probably have to eliminate you from the little experiment, because you have done fine arts, so that would be difficult for you. So I'll say this is not an art project or an experience. This is a psychological event that we're going to have through color, and I'll explain it later. But I've done this with many, many college groups, and I have also, when I worked in the barrios of East Los Angeles for the mothers, had many, many mothers in groups to do this. At Goddard College, I had the whole faculty do it. That's one of the unique things about this, and I'll show you. The reason you can't look at each other is that what is coming from your archetype patterns has to do with shape and form, and these we carry around with us. Some of us are able to have different kinds of figurations than others. Anyway, I'll put these down, because what we do with the whole group is, and after I put them there, and I'll tell you why I grabbed these, and I'll have to read on the bag who they came from. But I have, I want to tell you, over 2,000 of these. And when I went to do my doctoral studies, one of the people at Santa Barbara University said, why don't you do it on this? Because I had been doing this. I said, no, I'd lose my mind. I can't do this, because it would have to be a psychological study. And I wanted to do mine in sociology, because my study was on Mexican-American people and why the attitudes of the women toward education. This had to do with some very okay. Now, it looks like a quilt, but the most amazing thing of this is, and I wish we could do it, because coming from you yourself, it would be more interesting, because God has made us each so unique and individual. What I said, they had to do exactly as I told them. They couldn't do just anything on the paper. They had to do exactly as I said. It only took about 5 minutes, and they all had the same colors. I said, now you can see this when I tell you, take the color you like the best out of the spectrum of red, blue, and yellow, black, and white, and put it on three different parts of the paper. And I only let a few minutes, because I said, you're not doing a painting now. You have to do as I tell you. Then I want you to take the color you think complements or goes well with the first color you chose, and surround those first three colors with that complementary, any way you want to. You don't have to have a solid line or a broken line. Render it any way you want to. The third instruction, very quick, was to take the color you think is the most dominant on the palette and show that a relationship exists between the first three areas you put on your paper. And then the last one was, take the color that is least important to you and fill some of the places on the remaining parts of your card. Now, every one of these pictures I have is done on the same size paper, but out of the, I think I got over 2,000, I have never had two alike. And that's the phenomena of our own very special self. And it's something I tried to do to show, way, way back in the beginning, I used to give talks to preschool teachers to say, please allow the children to do their own thing. And then when I had the mother group and the teachers, we would do this, and I'd say, you see what you have, it's so unique. And that was one way. If I had said, You can't do this with children. They will say, I want to take more. I want to put more. I was asked to do it with in the junior high school. And I said, I won't be able to get that across because they have their own art sense yet, hopefully. And they'll say, I want to put more than three colors on there. I'll surround it some other way. It'll give you an argument because their art sense is still intact. If you want adults to, it's research, is sometimes better backwards. If you want to get a free rendering, you have to go the opposite way and give adults specific instruction. And all I did was use color as the tool, you know, and those instructions to get this. But it's amazing, and after I had, you know, several hundred, and they asked me if I would do the research, but it would have to be research on why you pick those colors, and that in itself goes way back to why you like that special color. You might have had a prom dress that color, and although you're not consciously aware of that, that's something that's retained in your memory bank, and those linear ways. And I'll tell you something, then they say, well, what did you base this on? Well, then I had to, look what, excuse me. These paintings were done by 12 mothers who volunteered from a group of approximately 40 participants at a lecture workshop held at the Alhambra Methodist Church Cooperative Nursery School. Okay, anyway, I've forgotten that long ago. I said, well, because I studied Jung, and Jung had, you know, done a lot of analytic artwork, and so did Freud, actually. So they have the three parts of the self, you know, the superego, the id, and the unconscious. The three parts of the self is what I was thinking in terms of where you put the three parts on the paper. And then the color you choose to complement those first three areas would be, in my mind, this is only because I had to think of some structure here for myself, your ability to relate to others. And then the third one was how closely you are involved with the relationship, whether it be husband or another care person that you care for. And then the last one was simply because I couldn't think of anything else to tell them except to take the color that was the least important and put it around there. The funny part, when I started to do this, I remember what was that college up of Pomona? Anyway, I began to recognize after I had done this for a couple of months in different workshops that there was a definite difference between the way the women rendered their, responses to these instructions and the men. This was, let me say, 20 years ago. Because then I went back to my readings of Jung, and he too said that men will make more striate lines, more structure, and women will always possibly have the shape of the ovum. And this was very obvious then when I was first doing. In fact, it got pretty silly because I'd say, I won't look at you doing them, and then I'd go up and say, well, this was done by the woman who's expecting now, and this was done by the lady that has the most children, and this is done by something. And then I did that about, for 12 verses, and then I got very scared, and I think the Lord said to me, listen, this is ridiculous. There was something there that was giving me, and they were all right, you know, and then people say, oh, and then they'd line up a mile, and I want you to read there. So then I told them about why I had thought those things. I said, you do your own kind of analysis if you want to have a meaning out of it, but I'm not going to do it anymore. But something has happened these past couple of years because you can't decipher the difference between a man's rendering and a woman's. And neither has our society, you know, I mean, our society has changed in that respect too. So it's very interesting, but art is a fascinating It's, you know, it brings out of us what's there that we didn't realize was there. So I hope you will start to paint. In fact, the book that I have, I'm going to leave those there because I can't get it over. The book I have here, Beautiful Art Lessons, actually has Leonardo da Vinci's, Leonardo da Vinci's lessons. Fix your course to a star. You know, he did these wonderful, the Last Supper, the Magi, I mean, all of the beautiful church paintings were done by Leonardo because he sensed the wonder in the world. I mean, this young man at 30, he did the Lord's Supper. And before that, he had already painted some fantastic pictures. He's somebody that everybody should study because he has a sense of reverence for life, and he knew that he could do anything. And we know him not only for his art, but because he has so many inventions. He even dreamed up about the airplanes, and that was hundreds of years ago. He also, he was born before Michelangelo, but they were friends, and they worked together many times to discuss and talk about the pictures. And of course, Michelangelo's picture of God reaching down and touching the man, to me, is the solution. When somebody says to me, evolution, there was a time when God decided that human form was ready to receive his spirit, and then that's what the Michelangelo pictured in his beautiful painting. But there are so much many. Oh, here's a Busan, you know, chart. He was looking at the brain there and drawing out the. I put mine into a tree, which this looks like a tree too. But science too was part of Leonardo da Vinci's whole way of thinking about the wonder of life. And he studied the beginner's da Vinci drawing course. And the rest of the book starts you out with a pencil and a piece of paper, and that's all you do. And I was so thrilled because he said scribble. I mean, you know, the man that wrote the book spent over 5 years back in Italy exploring and researching the life of Leonardo da Vinci. And there are many, many tablets with information about his early life. And so in the first place, you just scribble. And scribbling allows the energy to come out of you so that you release some of the inhibitions that you have, that you think you're not an artist, because you are an artist. You really are an artist, believe me. This is part of what we want to do. This is a picture my dear friend, Rhoda, who was so willing to help me. And I have something that I'd really like to share, because I think it's something that was, I couldn't possibly do everything yesterday on vision. This is not only vision, this is art and vision. So when you look at this, if you can tell what it is, then don't say it. Okay? God bless you. Spend every class. Give you 16 minutes of credit. You can look at it any way you want. But if you find out, please don't answer yet. Just kind of keep it quiet in your mind. I think somebody knows.
Not me.
Can I tell you?
Yeah.
I can't wait anymore. Actually, it's a cow. Can you hold it?
Which way?
See the cow? When you know what you're looking at, you see his head here.
Wait, can you back up for the rest of us?
I'm sorry. See his nose?